please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 433. I'm Lisa Sheps. I'm joined today by Nick to the First Power.
Nick to the First Power!
We're missing our Nicole Shiro today. You're listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby. We stream this puppy live at koop.org. We'll be right back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, October 4th, 2017. On the show today, we have people from, or person from, Vive Les Arts Theater in Killeen to talk about what's going on there. And also the Zach Theater is here to talk about a very unknown show called Singin' in the Rain. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, Chicago, New York, and McLean, Virginia. Don't go away.
Well done or sliced thin on a bun with a sauce. Orange sauce.
Orange sauce.
Cheese nips.
Cheese nips. Party time.
What made you choose that, Lisa?
Well, we're going to talk about it. Well, that is from God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater.
I didn't sneeze.
You didn't sneeze, and your name is not Rosewater. And, of course, one of our guests, Mr. Abe Reibald, or Reibald, called that out while it was going on. Introduction coming soon. So, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater is a show that opened in the 90s, and it was written by... I just lost his name.
By Menken.
Yeah, Menken. Menken. Alan Menken. And they just released the CD.
Oh, that's
cool. So I pulled
cool.
it out. And I think Encores did it, but it didn't say it in the Wikipedia page. But I'm pretty sure Encores did it just recently, like in the last, I think last year. Abe, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Nodding doesn't work on radio.
I know. The reason I know that is that show is because they did it at my college at CCM, and Lynette Perry sang that song.
So what is CCM? Wait, don't tell me. Clearwater...
Cajun Music.
Music Academy. Or Cover Clearly...
Mostly. By Clairol.
So what is CCM?
Is the Cincinnati...
Credence Clearwater Revival.
Oh, my God. It's Cincinnati Conservatory of Music in Cincinnati.
I call it Sin City. So let's introduce everybody. You have heard the disembodied voice of Mr. Abe Reibald. Hi, Abe.
Hello, Abe Reibald from Zach Theater.
From Zach Theater. We have Sarah Burke.
Hello.
How are you, Sarah?
I'm
welcome
wonderful.
Back.
Thank you.
Carrie Saffron.
Hi.
And Jerry Giuliano.
Hello.
We're here to have a good time. I didn't check in with Nick Mayo, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I can't complain.
Yes. I'm missing my friend Nicole Shiro, but sending her a whole heck of a lot of love. We miss you today.
Shiro, we're sending you lots and lots of love. She's having a sort of a rough day today, and we're embracing her with hugs from the FM airways.
Yes. Wait a minute. Nicole, feel this? That was the sound of our love going through the airwaves into your Corazon.
Directly from our Foley artist department here Offstage and On the Air. Okay, here's what we're going to do. First of all, I want to thank once again a lovely show for Mr. Kim Simpson and his show. Oh my gosh. The International Folk Bazaar. I'm a mess today.
No, listen.
I'm a chocolate mess.
You're a beautiful mess.
I'm a chocolate mess. So the other thing, and I think I can do this, I sort of needed, and I don't know when it is, Rent is coming to town, I believe next week.
How are we going
to
pay?
How are we going to pay this year's rent? That's the original tune.
It's coming next week? That's the original tune. Year's rent.
It's coming next week. We're going to give away a couple tickets.
What?
Wow. Yep, we're going to give away a couple of tickets, and I'm not sure exactly which day because I don't have any of the information. But it is next week at the Bass Concert Hall. It is the 30th, 50th?
That's
80th anniversary of
it
Rent.
It is not the 50th.
I believe it is the 150th anniversary.
It
opened
not,
in the 80s, so it had to be the...
did not open in the 80s.
90s?
Yes!
It's 20th.
I mean, at least.
25th anniversary.
Yeah.
It's now, officially, it is the 25th anniversary of Rent.
Let's call it the 25th.
That's what it is. Anyway, we're going to give away two tickets, and here's what we're going to do. If you are brave, for the next 15 minutes... call in to 512-472-5667. We're going to immediately put you on the air because that's the only way we have to answer the phone. And then and then we will figure out what we're going to do from there. Okay?
Well, we're going to give you some tickets.
Yeah, you're going to get tickets. 512-472-5667. Lines are open now. And so for our guests, just know that we may have to just interrupt whatever we're doing to answer the phone. So that's the way it rolls here. The Cher show.
Wow. Yeah.
So I'm reasonably certain we've talked about it here on the air.
Yeah.
But it's getting closer and closer. It's going to start performances already in June, at the Oriental Theater in Chicago. And I remember about, I want to say 3-4 months ago, there were auditions for Cher. So they've got three actors playing Cher.
I could not get an appointment to save my life.
Well, oddly enough, in the way the call was written, you could have. They said you do not need to look like Cher to do this. Yeah. It's not about what we all know of Cher. So I find that interesting casting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is, one of the producers is Rick Elise, who co-wrote Jersey Boys, who I just found out less than an hour ago that there is a local connection to that. There is a chicken place over here called Young Bloods that I had lunch at today, and I talked to one of the owners, Jeff, and he's a New York, ex-New York performer, and Rick Elise is a very, very dear friend of his.
Hey, so, chicken dot guy, that's awesome.
Chicken Young Bloods. But
all you have to do is go in for poultry.
And he co-wrote the book for Jersey Boys.
That's awesome.
Jersey Boys.
That song was cut.
It was
cut. For our listeners who don't know, that song was cut.
Oddly enough, it was cut right after opening night. First preview night. But other things that are coming in, jukebox musical type things. So they're doing a Donna Summer musical, which is looking pretty interesting.
My
What's
buddy Jessica's out in California doing it right now. And they're apparently having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've heard a lot. There's a lot of good buzz about that.
The gay community is losing their minds right now with Cher and Donna Summer. I just want to say, listeners out there, please control your excitement if you're driving.
Okay. And then also there's Ain't Too Proud, The Life and Times of the Temptations.
Once again.
Yep. Raise your hand if you've worked with the Temptations before. I have. Yeah, just me? Okay. Raise your hand if you met Shaq last night, yesterday. Yes, just me.
Shaq?
Yeah. Okay, so the Cher show was...
Wait, what?
I was doing a corporate gig and he was there. He's tall. I don't know if y'all knew that.
He had
to duck to get through doors.
Yeah.
So the director of Cher is Jason Moore, who did Avenue Q, and choreographer Christopher Gattelli, who did... Newsies.
And South Pacific. He's lovely. He's a lovely dude.
Was Cher ever on Broadway?
No.
Anybody else want to?
I don't think she was. She played in Vegas
so
a while, right?
I have three
right?
no's.
Wait a minute.
I have three no's.
No idea.
No idea. An abstention.
Yeah,
okay.
No idea.
Two abstentions. And I'm going to vote yes.
Because you know the answer. Yes. She was production of Night Mother.
Can
right?
I change my answer?
She was in Come to the Dime. Come to the Dime.
I
to come to the Five and
that.
Dine. Jimmy Dean.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Which makes really good sausages.
About that.
You're dark.
Okay. So we talked about Clockwork Orange last week. I don't really want to bring it up again because it didn't really do good. But the Times did not review it last week, but they did now. So there was a but not one of the not Jesse or more. I was about to say Ben. Mel Gusso. That's how old I am.
You're like
Mel
John.
Gusso. That's a long time ago. Alexis Solosky. Speaking of well, let's talk about that. Remind me to talk about critics because I have a thing. Anyway, not going to really say much about it other than they didn't hate it as much as everybody else did.
All right, there you go.
That's one way to spin it,
as they say in Vegas.
Yeah. Just to remind folks, if you want tickets to Rent, 512-472-5667. Just be brave. You're going on the air. If nobody calls in by the time we get done, we'll come up with a different procedure. Nothing's opening on Broadway yet. I guess it's all starting like next week. Previewsy stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think that the summer's dried out. People in rehearsals think they're going to open.
1984 is closing Sunday.
Yep.
That's it. Okay.
Goodbye. All right.
There you go.
Why is it closing? I thought it was a big hit.
No.
Was it always a limited run?
I don't think so. Oh. No. People found it very disturbing. I wanted to see it.
Yeah.
I do too.
Why is disturbing a bad thing?
Well, disturbing to the point people were throwing up.
Yeah. They torture people.
Fainting.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. It's a disturbing story.
All right. Well.
Okay, so John Doyle did this production of As You Like It that is done by the Classic Stage Company on 13th Street. And so this was a cut-down version. So there's been a lot of cut-downs, very similar to the As You Like It that played in the park this summer that was 90 minutes. This came in at 100 minutes. But it says, this production, Mr. Doyle's first Shakespeare in New York, is so cut down, it has bled out. So it's not very, very... It doesn't sound like something I would want to see based on this review, Jesse Green's review, and you know how I feel about Jesse Green.
I know you do.
they said that there's the triple wedding at the end, mm-hmm. right? So that's 2, 4, 6 people right there. I think there's a cast of 7 or 8. They actually bring somebody in from the audience to fill in at the end because they don't have enough people. And he just basically says it got torn down. Way too much. It said the set, which is John Doyle's own design, consists of little more than a steamer trunk and a curtain. So, all right, well, that's it.
Okay. It's one of my favorite Shakespeare plays. And I think he's such a good director. He's such a good director. And he's a good director of Shakespeare. And I hope that he gets more opportunity to do more Shakespeare because I think that we should see his work.
Well, folks should know that he did this the pared down version of The Color Purple, which just was on Broadway last season.
One of the best things I've ever seen.
Yeah, and everybody's wow. I haven't seen the. It's coming here. I think next year, mm-hmm. Or maybe it's this season. But it's the cut down version, which everybody is saying was so much better than the original. Which, as Nicole and I talk about all the time, how could you make that any better? It was so great. Mm-hmm. So that's good. He also did the pared back Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
The demon Barbara Fleet.
opted up.
Gonna get you guys going there.
Okay. We can talk in accents like this the rest of the show because I'm down with that. It's fine with me, Lisa. Let's go there.
Absolutely. So we had also been talking about a long time here on this. I want to talk about the critics. I totally forgot to write this into the script, but I'm a podcastaholic. Anybody else here listen to podcasts?
Yeah.
Okay, so nodding doesn't. As I said, yes. There's lots of nods going on. I'm a podcastaholic, and I listen to for a long time. There were really no theater podcasts, or very few. And I've been listening to, there's a BroadwayRadio.com has a whole bunch. They have Today on Broadway and This Week on Broadway and some others that I like and don't like. There's also a podcast called Theater People Podcast, which is really sort of fun. That is run by a super fan. And he's very, very knowledgeable. And he gets interviews with everybody you could imagine, including Mr. Lin-Win-Well-Wawanda.
Thank you, Barbara Walters.
Lin-Win-Well-Wawanda.
What kind of tweet would you be?
Who was very vocal on the Twitter sphere this week, right? Saying that calling people interesting names based on the politics of the day. Anyway, there is a new podcast, and I wish I had written down because I can't remember all their names. It's called Three on the Isle. It's got Elizabeth Vincentelli, who writes for, she's a critic for many papers, including the New York Times, and I don't remember their names. The Washington Post critic and one other critic. They widely disagree in their politics and in their ideas on theater, and they do a three for the eye. It's three for the all. They've done one podcast so far, which I listened to, and Elizabeth Vincentelli, right? I had assumed that I would hear a American person speaking, but this person clearly speaks with an accent. So Elizabeth Vincentelli, does anybody know her? Know of her? Know of her? Yes.
No.
No.
She's been a critic for the Times for a long time. But who would assume? Where would you assume she's from?
Italy.
Yeah, me too. France. Well, she's right. French.
What's sure. in the name?
Yeah, French. Anyway, but it's a very interesting podcast. They widely disagree with one another on theater things, and so they basically their first podcast was about politics and theater, and they disagree politically and they disagree on theater. So it was very interesting. Opening, I'm looking forward to hearing that. It's three on the aisle. You can pick it up at iTunes.
That makes me want to listen to that.
Along with Offstage and On the Air, another very good theater podcast.
Excellent.
From what I hear. All right. So many people were looking forward to the revival of When Pigs Fly. Has anybody heard of that show?
Yeah.
No.
I saw it in New York. The
did
original.
You?
Yeah.
Did you love it?
Absolutely. So creative. So hilarious.
I have not seen it. But
was it Carol Ann Knipple? She ran a theater.
That's a last name.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It is a name. That's going on. I have a name.
Oh, no.
List.
It is a lot of fun, that
well,
show.
It's interesting. So it was part of several of high-profile gay-themed shows, like The Torch Song and Boys in the Band, which are coming back. So this was all set to open on October 30th, and they pulled it because of a shortfall in investment.
Interesting.
Interesting. And some of the... producers include people like, sorry, it says Joshua Goodman. I thought it said John Goodman. I said, he can afford a back.
That's hysterical.
So Joshua Goodman, Louise Hall Beard, and Gene Feisch Jr. I don't know that person. So they said they had a shortfall in money coming in the producers, so they couldn't fund it. It had Bob Mackie costumes, and they said that was one of the biggest funding issues. But to me is... go without Bob Mackie costumes.
Well, but I can also understand it. If you're in a season with Torch Song Trilogy and a direct Joe Mantello revival of Boys in the Band, I would to throw in a third there. That's a risk for me, so I can kind of understand.
Well,
I'm talking,
but
out
it's
of
a
my
little.
Ear,
it's also well, I hear you, but it's a little late in the game. I mean, they've known that they've known that they've been.
Was
part
it
of
an off Broadway revival or a Broadway?
It was an off Broadway. Okay. Stage 42.
Yeah.
Well, then get on it, fools.
So I'm guessing there's more to the story.
I'm guessing there is as well.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Stand by. Let's see what's next.
But even still. Off-Broadway is getting more and more expensive. Off-Broadway is the new Broadway, and Broadway is the new Disney.
Oh.
Yeah.
And you heard it here first on Offstage and On the Air.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I'm with you. So there was another off-Broadway.
Barbara's here.
Off-Broadway review from the Access Theater. It's called Breeders, and this is interesting. It's the beginning of this. This is Jesse Green again as well. This is the New Light Theater, and they call it a satire of mainstream queerness. It follows two couples, one a gay male couple. And they are looking forward to their first child. They have a surrogate. And then the other couple are hamsters.
What?
Hamsters.
I like it already.
And they're played by people in little hamster costumes.
Wait, they're not played by hamsters.
Dream job.
Yeah, I know.
It's a union issue.
No equality.
But they called it... it's both ridiculous and strangely moving.
Oh, my God.
But it does say, Breeders, which is the name of it, though quite funny and thoughtful in parts, falters for reasons that many children come to understand a few weeks after Christmas. Hamsters have a very limited repertoire.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Yeah.
Okay. So we talk here about the words that critics use and needing a dictionary for. Now, I did not look this word up, so I don't know what it is either. And I have it here on my iPhone ready to look up. So we'll all try to figure it out together. This is my first experience to do this. And you can't cheat, Mr. Nick Mayo.
All right.
I see you with your phone.
No, I was going to get the definition up for you quickly.
No, I've got it ready.
Oh,
it's already here. So, okay. Here's the sentence. Oh, it's a long one. I'll find another place to come in. Talking about the actors, Leah McKenna Garcia as Tyson, the smarter, dominant female, give impressions of chrysotid behavior.
No clue.
Yeah, and look subtly cute. Christed behavior and looks utterly cute. Christed, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. C-R-I-C-E-T-I-D.
C-R-I, wait, spell it again.
C-R-I-C-E-T-I-D.
C-E.
Okay, it's pronounced like this.
Christed.
Christed.
Okay.
Oh, and that's like a, like, of a relating to a creature, right?
Well, it is a zoology term. So you're...
Pretty and smart.
What did she win?
It is. Very good. So this is any of a diverse group of scampering, digging, or jumping rodents. Okay, I like this word.
I like that word, too.
Word. Yeah. It's a good word.
Okay, I approve of the use of this word.
I do, too. I kind of want to bring that into my life, like to describe Nicole.
Christed. Right now,
I
she's
thought
a
it was a Jesus name.
Doris, it does sound a little Jesus-y. For this Jewish girl, you know, who knows. We've talked about King Kong a lot on this show. I don't know. So are y'all familiar with the King Kong? It looks incredible. You can see a picture here. Let me just show it to you. It's a huge... So when we first talked about this over a year ago, it was in Australia, I think. They showed this huge puppet, like big puppet, in the middle of a huge theater.
Are you saying there's a musical of King Kong happening?
There is. Well, and this has been...
To prove my point earlier, just to throw that out there.
So they have been threatening to bring it here for 2 or 3 years.
And we say no!
So King Kong is 24 feet high and, yes, hairy.
Wow.
They are now looking for, and I may audition for this, someone to play Ann Darrow,
yes,
the beauty, mm-hmm, for the Broadway theater to open theater in the fall of 2018.
Is it like a Little Shop of Horrors thing where someone sings King Kong's songs off stage?
I don't know. I think he probably makes, he probably does this.
Yeah. Singing Dancing Monkey. I mean,
we're going for realism.
Everybody loves that.
So this is a $20 million budget.
Woo!
See, I don't want to make comparisons, but Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. In Michael Riedel's column about it, they talked about one of the requirements for auditioning for this role, which is why I think I should get it. You have to be able to scream.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just feel bad for Telsey's office, like, and all the people who are auditioning around it. Like, it's not necessarily the being in the audition room, but everyone who's like trying to focus next door as they audition for, I don't know, a regional theater productions in Amadeus or something. And all they keep hearing is like young girls from Ninth Avenue screaming. It's horrible. I feel bad for
terrible,
it.
Terrible,
terrible,
terrible, terrible. Myla, that's a. I just went to a. I just went to in my own head. I went to a Fiddler on the Roof reference that only I got. So go on. And this, of course, and this is another shout out to our dear, lovely Nicole, who we love and is dear, being dear and lovely. So she loves sports. And it turns out that, does anybody know who Daryl Morey is?
No.
Nope.
No, me neither.
A sports player?
No, he's a sports owner. He owns the Houston Rockets. Okay. And he will soon be a Broadway musical producer, writer. He's creating a Broadway musical called Small Ball. I don't know if it's a Broadway musical. It's a musical called Small Ball. It's going to open in Houston.
How are the gays feeling about this one?
They're not as excited about this one.
Well,
reporting to you live.
For extra credit... For extra credit, do you the basketball and Broadway met up a few years back, a few seasons back? Y'all remember what?
Lysistrata Jones.
Lysistrata Jones.
And we all saw how that went.
Yes, not well. And I was. It looked so good. I so wanted to. Did you see it?
I did.
Did you love it? I wanted to love it.
Flamonte had a good number, basketball number.
And I mean, basketball makes its way into the Broadway in shows like Promises, Promises. I don't know who I turned into just then, but whoever she is, I want her over for tea.
She was a smooth talking Katharine Hepburn.
She
if you
was
ask me.
Norman. Anyway, good luck. Good luck on the basketball. That sounds amazing. A basketball musical.
So basketball musical. It will open in Houston, so we might have to take a field trip, an offstage and on the air field trip.
I'm there.
Yeah. Okay. I'm there. I think I may have gone through all of my things, although. Hot off the presses as I was coming here was an article in the New York Times about Stand By Your call is important. I'm not gonna be able to find it. But it was something that I remember I wanted to talk about, and so what do I know?
Can I just throw in something real quick?
Please do.
I am obviously representing the gay community on the air right now. Will and Grace was good. I liked it.
I haven't seen it yet.
I liked it.
Wait, I have a counterpoint to that.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Oh.
Oh.
Didn't I like? So here's what I think. Were you a big Will and Grace fan when it was on?
Yeah.
First? Okay, I think that's the difference.
Oh.
If you weren't a big Will... I liked it okay. I watched it a few times. If you weren't not a big Will and Grace fan, you didn't find it wonderful. If you were, you did.
Yeah, I liked it.
Well,
yeah.
That makes sense.
I think that's right. Yeah, there's we were Broadway, talking about that I mean, earlier.
There's a lot of Broadway up on that screen.
Yeah, but it's... I feel that it... So it closed... Or it went off the air 11 years ago.
Yeah.
I believe it moved nary an inch from there.
Yeah.
Look marvelous.
I had a good time. Made me happy.
And Megan Mullally hasn't aged an ounce.
It's a lot. Yes.
It seems.
Yeah.
And
she looks great.
Yeah, everybody looks great. So, all right, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to listen to a little bit from When Pigs Fly, and we're going to come back and talk to the folks from Singing in the Rain. Stay right where you are, for gosh sakes.
Come on, now.
If you want to win at love.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick to the First Power.
Nick to the First Power.
We're missing our Nicole Shiro, but we do have Nick Mayo here. We've been talking to Jerry Giuliano, Sarah Burke, Carrie Safran, and Abe Reibold. And we're going to continue on. Switch gears in a moment. But I did the thing I was going to talk about, I couldn't remember to talk about, is the Honeymooners musical.
Oh.
Which looks very interesting.
Is
so we'll just
to the moon, Alice.
It's Go to the Moon. So I'm wondering how they're going to handle because this, the Honeymooners, as we saw it in the 50s and 60s, extremely sexist, threats of domestic abuse were common. So I'm going to be interested in how they'll handle the musical. So there you go. That's what I'm going to throw out there. We'll talk about it later.
That's a good point.
I have good points. So here we have from Zach Theater, which is a small theater close to Zilker Park. we have Mr. A. Reibold, who is the associate creative director. The
associate artistic director.
Artistic director.
Official title.
And the director of this piece of Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Yes.
We have Sarah Burke, who is the dance captain and plays 3,000 parts in it.
Yeah.
Basically.
Lots of changing clothes.
And Carrie Safran, who plays Lena Lamont.
True.
Yep. So, Abe, what's the show? I don't know what it's about.
Singing in the Rain. About? Based on the classic movie from the 50s, it's just this wonderful romantic musical. Incredible songs. It's kind of like the original jukebox movie because it was like Gershwin's American in Paris, where they took all these songs from the 20s and kind of found a narrative that Comden and Green came up with this wonderful story about this movie studio going through the change from silent pictures to talkies and all the hilarity and craziness that ensues.
Was it indeed the 50s or the 60s? Was it the 50s?
52.
Oh, my Lord, I'm old.
I'm always so interested when people approach an iconic film or piece like this. Like when we had Wizard of Oz folks on from Zilker, I'm always interested to know everyone's relationship to it. Like, for instance, Singing in the Rain is our family Christmas movie that we watch. Abe, do you have anything in your life?
I just remember, because I grew up in a sports household, so I'd have to go to my Jewish friends' houses to get culture. So, and I saw Singing in the Rain the first time there when I was probably 8 years old, and I just remember looking at the screen going, what is happening? Just like being amazed by all of it.
Totally. What about you, Sarah?
I was a theater kid growing up, so I watched it a ton when I was younger and fell in love with it like that, but I hadn't really experienced anything like it wasn't like a Christmas thing or a family thing. It was just kind of like me in my room.
A weekend thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just like, hey, I'm going to watch it again.
How can you not like it, Carrie?
I'm sorry, boy.
What's your relationship with the film?
I was raised by a classic movie buff. So,
Singing
so you
saw
in the
it a
Rain
lot.
It's probably the movie that I've seen the most in my life.
Well, and when I went to college back in the 70s, and I took a history of motion picture course, that was one of the films that we studied. Before we move on, I got a very quick tangent. Carrie, before the show started, I gave you a job. Do you remember what that job was?
Nope.
Okay, I asked you to choose a number between 2 and 52, and you chose 27. Let's...
Nope.
This I'm firing on all cylinders.
This is turning out to be a fun day. Yeah. So here we go. Let's listen to what you chose.
Hey, how you doing? I'm Jay Harrison G with Kinky Boots First National Tour playing Lola, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin.
We may need to do it one more time. My levels weren't ready for that. Sorry.
And,
you blew
us away. And I was like eating the mic.
Yeah, it went on. Wow. That was, I don't know that this, that may have been the first time we've gotten to play that
I've
one.
I've never
so
heard
that's good.
That. I've never heard that one.
You he won't was, hear riffing like that and singing in the rain.
No. He was so much fun to talk about. So I have a question. We'll presume that most people, we'll just presume that our audience knows the story of Singing in the Rain and a lot of the iconic things. My biggest question, and Carrie, you've probably gotten this question before. Okay. You're playing Lena Lamont,
yes.
Who's got probably one of my most favorite lines. So do you embrace the characterization that from the movie, or did you work against it to find your own voice?
I think that from, I will say, a vocal safety standpoint, the voice that I have wound up doing is the one that I can sustain.
Okay.
But I would say it's ultimately a combination of Kristen Chenoweth, Melanie Griffith, and Gene Hagen from the movie.
Okay. Yeah, it's got to be hard because, you know, with that, we all, you know, I can't stand him. We want to hear that. And so it'd be hard as a performer to go, do I fight that or do I just
No,
embrace
there's some
it?
That you just got to jump in there and, you know, kind
she
of give
them
what they want. Exactly. But the rest of it, and the fun part for me, well, it's all fun and glorious, is the physical comedy aspect.
Yes.
And that I get to sort of, Abe is wonderful about letting me just run wild with that.
So he just pushes you out there and allows you to chew the scenery.
We reel it in sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, Carrie has great training from like the Groundlings. She's a real natural comedian. So her ability to play within the moment, and also it's about the truth in the moment for her always, even though she's getting laughs. The way she can dissect a joke is just pretty exciting.
Well, she's funny out there, and we'll talk about you in the third person like you're not here. And if you do it, if you have access to the internet, into the interwebs, you can find on the YouTubes her audition for Saturday Night Live,
which clearly was unsuccessful.
I've not seen this,
it's
but I'm doing
cool.
this right when we get done.
You guys are coming towards the end of your rehearsal process, and speaking of what you were talking about, physical comedy and this joy of this piece, Abe, one of the challenges that I find, I think that two of the hardest things to sustain on stage, both as an actor and as a director, are fear and joy. How are you, because fear, right? You mm-hmm. After a few times, you know that someone's going to pop out and go boo when we do Macbeth. That's a hard thing to sustain. Mm-hmm. Joy is also, because joy is fleeting, right? Joy is, you have these explosions. In your process, how are you finding the cast as a whole? Because this is an explosion of joy, Singing in the Rain. There's so many just beautiful, iconic explosions of joy that end up in dance, mm-hmm. right? How are you guys right now? Are you just dying for an audience? What's the joy level over at the top for? What's going on there?
Well, we've had a week of previews so far, and the audience response has been incredible. So, yeah, I would say that they're definitely feeding off of that. Yeah. And I just think the material itself, there's just so much to play with, and there's mm-hmm. just so much, like you said, natural joy in it. And then just the people that we have doing these roles are so fantastic. Our Luke Hawkins, who plays Don Lockwood, is sort of a daredevil in life. And so on stage, when that water comes down, he is just like some actors, you would be worried that they'd be worried. Like, mm-hmm. I've got to jump up on this thing. What if I slip? What if I fall? And he's like, let's just go out there and play, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's really fun to see the actors in this space mm-hmm. embracing this material.
And the rain curtain is so fun to play with. That's got to be one of the biggest joys as a director, I would assume. To me, as someone who also embraces, is a risk taker, would love playing in the rain curtain. But that's interesting. That happens at the end of Act 1, correct?
Yes, and at the end of Act 2. Sarah can talk a little bit about that, because the ensemble gets to frolic in all that rain. And
oh, yeah.
And we had to find some alternatives so people wouldn't slip.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's super fun. Like, imagine it raining outside and you get to go play, but now like play with awesome costumes and people clapping for you. You're like, this is the greatest thing I've ever done. But they, it was a little interesting the first time we ran, in the finale, the whole, ensemble is in rain boots and raincoats and everything. So figuring out where the water puddled, figuring out, okay, we actually can't do this formation change here because you can't run through water that quickly. So we had a couple, you know, faults and people bite the ground pretty hard the first few times, but then you figure out your footing and you figure out how quickly you can change, and you can never be too confident in yourself though, because the moment you're like, I got this, you fall.
You're down. So you're one down. Would assume, so with that in mind, so a lot of times you don't get to experience the technical pieces of the theater until you actually move into the space and tech it. But did you have dance rehearsals either outside or splash down so that they get used to dancing in puddles?
No.
Never? Oh,
no. The tech week when we moved into the theater for tech week was the first time we each, like three of us at a time, got to play in the rain for a second, but we were in our normal street shoes. So it wasn't the exact footing, but kind of got to feel how it felt. It's always different if you get like water flung in your eye from someone's umbrella like one night and then you're blind for half the number. But yeah, no, we got probably like three chances to do it before we had an audience. Then it was just like, okay, don't fall in front of people.
But so how fun was this to direct?
Oh, I had a blast. I mean, it was stressful too, because I mean, it's a huge show. Any big musical is hard to do, as you guys know, Nick knows as a director. But I, you know, what's fun for me is seeing people that I know and have worked with before, and also new people like Carrie, just excel in their craft. And it's been really, really exciting to see this cast come alive.
So who else is in the cast?
Okay, Sasha Hutchings is playing Kathy Selden. Blake Spallacci is playing Cosmo Brown. Mm-hmm. We've got some other locals, Cullum and Eric Matthews, and
who else do we have?
Michelle Alexander.
Yes, we love our Michelle.
You can't talk about this piece without celebrating the choreographer. Talk a little bit about what that process was like, and talk about your choreographer for this piece, right?
Dominique Kelly. How much time do we have to talk about Dominique?
Oh my goodness, praise be unto him.
This is my third collaboration with him at Zach Theater, and I just love working with Dominique.
Which other shows did he do?
We did Sophisticated Ladies together and Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Okay. Yeah.
He's the smartest person. Like,
smarter than me?
He's so smart. His choreography is storytelling. The way he holds a rehearsal and the way he speaks to you about small little moments is just, I've never worked with a choreographer that is so in touch with each and every actor on stage.
Yeah, he really understands character. Like, I don't dance in the show, but the things that he would say to me about, you know, what's happening with Lena, it's like, oh, yep, okay, you're right.
Choreography is not just dance. There's so many other reasons to utilize choreographer. I think that's great. Unfortunately, we're smack out of time. What you guys are actually playing now, when do you close?
October 29th. The show runs till then.
Right. And where can folks go to get more information?
They can go to zachtheater.org. Uh-huh. And if they're really ready to buy tickets now, 512-476-0541 is the Zach box office.
Right. And you can also just get information at that telephone number. You don't have to actually buy anything, right? You could
Correct.
Just get some information.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. Hopefully, all of you or some of you will have time to stick around and join us backstage.
Yes.
And then I'm seeing the show tomorrow night, so I'm looking forward to seeing it.
We'll see you there. Thank you Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being
Thank
here.
You.
That was Abe Reibold, Carrie Saffron, and Sarah Burke of Zach Theater's production of Singing in the Rain, playing now through October 29th. For more information, you may visit zachtheater.org. We'll be right back. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. We've talked the whole night through.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. We blabla snaka dala morning.
But make sure to eat your
big shoes.
Big shoes.
Yanana zinginga managa.
Shanami foodi bay.
Zingamayan zinginga gaga ba.
Fiddle.
Okay. Boy, Paisner. I'm so looking forward to today in theater history because I have something that I want to talk to you about that's part of that. But before I do that, I just saw something that Lynn Nottage. Is going to be speaking at the Harry Ransom Center on October 24th.
I wish he would shave Harry Ransom.
Oh. Boy, I was wondering where you were going.
So sorry.
With that.
So sorry.
Yeah. Say that again, because your microphone wasn't on.
Oh, I said then he couldn't be Harry Ransom.
That's true. So Harry Ransom Center. And Lynn Nottage, of course, is the Pulitzer Prize winning writer of Sweat.
Sweat.
So I unfortunately will be out of town for that, but that's October 24th. You can get information at the HarryRansomCenter.com or whatever it is. Or you can go to OffstageOnAir.com and we have a link to it. Update on Ground Floor Theater.
Yes.
Very quickly. We did reopen. We did play 2 weeks of Gibberish mostly. We were very, very happy with everything that we did there, and we loved that the people came out. And we just continue on.
Lisa, I want to take a second because this is my, as a board member, and a first time patron, it was a really cool experience to come out to Ground Floor Theater and see the immersive quality of your space, the way you celebrate communities who are underrepresented. I felt like I was part of some. I felt like I did something good for myself.
Yeah, that's good.
A lot of times I go to the theater and I feel like I don't always have the feeling of mutual admiration that I felt walking through the door of Ground Floor Theater. And I felt like me being there and us sharing that experience together was really special. So I'm
thank you.
And I'm super excited for where it continues to go.
Moi aussi. Well, so let's just jump right into Today in Theater History.
Today.
Today in Theater
History.
Oh.
Aww.
1956, the new CBS series Playhouse 90 premieres, and it was live drama television. Back in the day, they did these drama plays, and they started with, it doesn't say what they started with, but they did shows like The Miracle Worker and The Time of Your Life, and they had writers like Rod Serling and somebody named Patty Chayefsky.
Oh, Patty Chayefsky.
1960, A Taste of Honey opened on Broadway. And it is a play about a working class white girl who sleeps with a black man in a provincial town, becomes pregnant. And it had several people in its 49-week run. But people like Angela Lansbury, Joan Plowright, Billy Dee Williams, Shayla Delaney. The playwright's name is Shayla Delaney, and she was 19 years old when she wrote it.
Wow.
Amazing. 1962. Every producer longs to hear the phrase "long lines at the box office." So this is what I wanted to talk to you about. So during the run of Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, when it opened on Broadway, our friend David Merrick closed all the windows at the box office with the exception of one to create lines.
I love it.
So, pretty smart. So,
this is we talk about David Merrick
and Scott Rudin
and how alike they are, and how I think we agree in the geniusness of it, but sort of disagree on the ethics behind it.
Oh no, I agree. Yes, I was about to say something, but no, I just think
they're very, very smart producers. I do not agree with the tactics from an ethical standpoint.
Yeah, and I just love it,
and other people love it. So. That's what makes horse races.
Oh, Lisa, I'm really happy to know that story. I didn't know that.
I didn't know it either. When I read it, I said, I can't wait to hear this. And I remember this in 1981, and I wish I had seen it. I had free tickets to this, and I did not go to see it. The Life and Times of Nicholas Nickleby.
Oh, which is so many people's favorite piece.
I know, and I had free tickets to it. It was the first, I don't know if it was the first time this has been done. It's been done similarly, but it's one piece that took, you had to buy two sets of tickets. So it was 2 3-hour chunks that you went in. And so there were packages when you'd go see a matinee in an evening of the whole show. But that opened in 1981. Wow. And they were the first to charge $100 for a ticket. But that was for both. So that equates to
$50. Yeah. Wow.
2009, Wishful Drinking. This was Carrie Fisher's show.
So funny.
Played. Did you see it?
I did.
You did?
I loved it.
Oh my gosh.
I loved it. I loved it. I put it and Elaine Stritch at Liberty as two of my favorite versions of that kind of theater.
Wow.
Awesome. One woman.
That's
one
high praise. Yeah. And then in 2006, Jennifer Holliday, and we talked about this, took over Shug Avery. She's not going.
She's
going
to tell you she's
not
going.
But she did win a Tony for that song.
She won a Tony for it. I remember when they announced that she was going in, I was like, well, I don't know.
She didn't win the Tony for Color Purple.
She won it for Dream Effie. Girls. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so she replaced Heather Headley. Birthdays, Liev Schreiber. Alicia Silverstone, Susan Sarandon, Charlton Heston.
Oh!
Tomorrow, here locally, Taylor Emily. And then tomorrow, locally, S.J. Williams, who used to be a programmer here, and Amy Lewis, who's a wonderful performer and lighting designer here in town.
As Nicole Shiro would say, bon anniversaire.
Bon anniversaire. So we'll take a little break and we'll come back and talk to Jerry Giuliano about the theater. Why do I have a mental block?
Vive les arts!
Vive les arts!
Vive les arts! It's so much fun to say, you'd think I wouldn't have a mental block against it, just knowing it is. But let's hear a little bit of Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. This is the studio version, not the original Broadway cast.
I want to be rich with money to burn.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Mayo.
Yeah.
Nick Mayo.
Yeah, who's he?
We just got finished talking to Abe Reibold, Carrie Safran, and Sarah Burke of Zach Theater. And now we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk to Jerry Giuliano, who is a member of the board. And I'm going to say, have you performed there as well?
I have,
and
yeah, quite a few times.
At Vive Les Arts in Killeen. And we, I know you and I talked about what was going on there a few months ago. Were you there in, when I was working at an elementary school in Killeen and I talked to some people that you weren't there that day?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, and that's when I learned about, actually, before we get started, I just want to share something with our audience. So let's just listen to this. Wait, hold on. Let's see if we can listen to it now. Never mind. There was a news report about the closing or the announced closing of Vive Les Arts, and I meant to open with that, and for some reason I didn't do it. But the board had decided to close, and then a group of volunteers got together to work to keep it open. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. So you know, it's really an amazing theater. I mean, you know. It's been there for 40 years. So, I mean...
Which is amazing. And a theater company opened in the 70s in an old movie theater.
Right, downtown.
And then you got funding to build this beautiful theater. And I saw it, I think, more than 10 years ago. And Nicole Shearer was doing a production of Into the Woods there. And I went to go see it. Beautiful theater.
It is. And you know, it's still a beautiful theater. Unfortunately, you know, it's been through some hard times. It really was kind of not very well taken care of. And so there were some issues with the building and attendance had dropped off. And some of the board members did decide maybe it's time to close. But it's such a beloved theater. I mean, the community really, really rallied around it.
So talk about what was the... So by the news report that I saw, it was really sort of a grassroots effort to get it to reopen. Was that indeed what happened, or is there a bigger, broader story there?
No, that's pretty much what happened. It was the community and the chairman at the time, Summer Heidebrink. She kind of orchestrated getting the members there, and really we had a meeting of the community, and we took votes and said, who wants to save? Everybody got up, got to tell their story, and it was almost a unanimous decision to keep it open. There was one who voted to close. And so...
So, but how did you deal with the funding issues? I was listening to the news report, and many things that we experience here in Austin with lack of interest, people not coming to see the shows, people not the philanthropic arm of the citizens of, in our case, Austin, in your case, Killeen, don't necessarily see the value in giving to a theater. Mm-hmm. So, but you still needed funding. You need to keep the doors open. So how did y'all address the funding issue?
We did. Well, luckily, I mean, the theater was never really broke. They did have money. Not a lot, but they had money to keep going. It was just a question of who wanted to take ownership and do the dirty work of fundraising and keeping the thing going.
Right.
So... That's what we did. We elected new board members. So it's a new thing for me. I'm excited about it. We got a great group of board members. There's, I think, three people who are from the original board. And we are already cranking. We're raising money like crazy. And so what we did for this year to help us, because we didn't have a lot of time, so we went out and we partnered with Waco Civic.
Oh.
So we're sharing a lot of productions this year.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so we're doing, I think, three or four of our main stage performances we're sharing with them. So they're going to play in both places. Auditions will be held in both theaters. And so if you're cast, you know, you're going to have to travel. But it's,
well, and Waco is what, 40 miles
yeah,
from Killeen?
Yeah,
about?
Probably yeah. about an hour probably uh-huh. to the theater.
Yeah.
So, and we're hoping to draw, you know, from both places.
And currently you have the Wonderettes Dream On moving in, correct?
We
on,
do, in the yeah, middle yeah, of the yeah. month. It's opening on the 19th. So that'll be the first performance. And that performance, it was already in production when we did this. So that'll be a strictly Waco cast.
So what happened to that production? I'm just curious, just logistically, what happened? Did they, were the, they were rehearsing, the news came across that you were closing, did they stop? And then when the news came back that you were staying open, did they come back and reassess?
Well, what happened, you're talking about with Waco?
Specifically with the Wonderettes.
With the Wonderettes. They were already in Waco, though, right?
Yeah, it was always a Waco show.
Oh, so, the Wonderettes was?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm yeah. sorry. I didn't realize
So whether
that.
Or not VLA ended up closing, they were still going to do
oh,
it.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, yeah. So it's on the VLA website, so I assumed it was a VLA production.
Right.
Okay, cool. But it looks wonderful. So what kind of work needs to continue to happen to the venue itself? Where are you lacking?
We are lacking just a lot of improvements. You know, we need equipment, but that theater is so old, and just the lighting and the sound, it all needs to be replaced. There are roof repairs that need to be done. Right. There's leaks that need to be filled. You know, that kind of stuff that just wasn't kept up. Now we're looking at, you know, $200,000 probably just in repairs.
Right. It's interesting when you go see, have you been out there, Nick?
I have not.
It's got a fly rail.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful theater, and you go out and you go in Killeen, Texas, and you go, oh, what is this beautiful theater doing out here that's mm-hmm. got all this? And it's a really, when I heard it was closing, I was really upset because it shouldn't close.
Jerry, yeah. How can our listeners who might want to, how can our listeners help? How can our community, as Waco and Killeen have come together to support each other, how can your neighbors in Austin help you? What are some things we can do to help you right now?
Well, thank you for asking that. You know, really, I mean, the biggest thing right now is just, we got a great season coming up. Please come and check out some of our shows. I mean, that
it's not a bad drive. I have done
that's it. That's a yeah. huge thing. And, you know, if you like what you see and you want to get involved, man, we, you know, we can use volunteers.
Have you partnered with other local, like restaurants or, you know, maybe even B&Bs to try to attract people from Austin and or Dallas or Waco to come down and not only spend the evening at the theater, but also to have dinner downtown or whatever? Y'all done
you know,
any of that?
We have not. That's actually an excellent idea.
That is free advice.
A place for somebody to stay and eat. No, that's a great idea because it is a long way, especially coming from Dallas.
Well, I'm just, what I like about this story personally is that the feeling of support of communities coming together to rally around that. So I'm hoping that if our listeners can just go and buy a ticket, look at what's going on, support that way. That's a great way for us to support
you. And you get to see theater in a beautiful space. And it's a comfortable theater. It seats, what, 300?
Yeah, about 350.
Yeah, so it's a nice-sized theater. Well, awesome. We're just about out of time. If people wanted to get more information about VLA or the productions you're having with Waco or your own, what would they do?
The best thing to do is go to our website, okay. www.vlacolleen.org.
Okay. And so what are you performing anything there coming up?
I don't think I'm going to be performing this season. I'm just so busy right now being on the board, which is new for me, okay. raising money and yep. doing things. So,
well, we love board members that do that, so that's good. But thank you for being on the show, and hopefully you can stick around and join us backstage.
Absolutely.
Awesome. That was Jerry Giuliano of Viva Le Arts in Killeen, Texas. The show that they're doing out of Waco is the Wonderettes Dream On, which is October 19th through 22nd. For more information on that show and other things that are happening at VLA Killeen, you can find it at vlacolleen.org. And also that's where you can see a link to that, a couple of news reports and get all the news and about what's going on there. So we'll go out with a little bit of the Wonderettes just to keep it going on because, right. you know what? Love will keep us together.
Love
it. Always comes back to ice cream. So, great show. What fun did we have today?
We had a really good time.
Okay. Shout out to Nicole Shiro.
We love you, Nicole.
Shout out to everybody in Las Vegas that's dealing with horrific, terrible things. Shout out to you guys. Our love at Austin as a creative city goes out to Las Vegas, which is also a very creative city. We go out to you. You can find us on the Facebook. You can find us on the Twitter. You can find us at iTunes for the podcast, and you can also get us. Do you know how to do that?
You just go online to offstageandontheair.com, enter your name in the little box on the right-hand corner, and we'll just
pop right in there.
Show up in the inbox.
Offstageonair.com. And the other thing I did want to talk about with you is, and I don't know whether you can talk about what you're doing at
the University
UT. Yes. Tell folks what you're doing.
Oh, man, I'm so excited. In a week and a half, we step into rehearsals for The Drowsy Chaperone at the University of Texas Department of Theater of Dance.
Jerry likes that.
It'll be their last musical, as their musical department, we'll talk more about this later, their musical theater department is ceasing to exist. So this will be the University of Texas Theater and Dance's last musical.
Saddens me.
Me too. Okay. But I'm excited to tell this story with those students.
Excellent. Well, The Drowsy Chaperone is a wonderful show, and Nick is a wonderful director, so it's going to be awesome. So with that, we will leave it to Austin Monitor News, which is coming up next. And let's listen to a little bit more of God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, as we say goodbye to this Wednesday.
Bye, Lisa.
Bye, Nick.
Welcome to a flowing font of truth and good and cash.
The curtain has just come down on Howling, the musical. The story of a young... That's the soundtrack from it. I don't think I have to say anything more about it. There it is. That's the whole thing. That's the opening number. Y'all just heard it here. Anyway, we have made it out the backstage door and down the stairs, and we're standing here by the dumpsters, standing in puddles of unknown liquid. And here with us is Carrie Safran, Abe Reibold, and Jerry Giuliano. Hi, you guys.
Howdy. Hey.
So it was great to have you guys on the radio show, and it's really glad. I'm very, very happy that y'all braved the backstage here and came out here under the dumpsters to talk to me.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I wore boots. I love a dumpster.
The dumpsters are nice. Did you know that dumpster is not a generic term? It's like Kleenex. It is an actual trade name.
Huh.
Yep. Garbage bin. There you go.
Well, what is the proper name for it?
Garbage bin?
That's it.
Big Maybe. Metal box.
I know. When I lived in England, we called it a garbage bin.
A garbage bin.
I was telling somebody the other day, I've been doing bad English accents so long, I don't think I can do a good one anymore. let's get to know who we're here. Jerry, where are you from? Texas?
Well, if you define where I'm from by where I was born, that would be negative. That would be New Orleans. But I've been in Texas for so darn long, it should be my home.
Okay, so where in New Orleans?
Slidell, if you know where that is.
I do. I played Slidell. As a matter of fact, I knew you were from Slidell because I saw you on the Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
I played Slidell in the 80s with Joffrey Ballet.
Cool. Oh, man. Have you been there lately?
No.
Looks exactly the same.
I'm sure.
So, yeah.
I'm sure. But I did. I played Slidell, and then we all got in the van and went to New Orleans and got in trouble. So you left Slidell and came straight to Austin?
I left Slidell. Oh, gosh. I went to, and I'll just mention this, and we won't move any further. I went to Utah for a while. Went to Arizona.
I call it Utah.
Utah?
Yeah.
Utah. Yeah.
Has anybody else been to Slidell, or is it just me?
Just you.
Just you.
If you drive anywhere east on I-10 from New Orleans to Florida, you have to drive right through it. So yeah, you probably have and didn't know it. You just didn't stop.
You slided just right by it.
You slid.
How old were you when you left Slidell?
20.
20, okay. So did you do theater in Slidell?
I did, yeah, in New Orleans.
Okay, well, what was it that brought you into the world of theater?
Oh, God, because what brought me into theater is I was just like a weird, nerdy little kid. I had no friend, like the TV was my friend, right? And so my mom was like, dude, you can't spend every day of your summer watching
TV. Did your mom really
TV.
Say dude?
She did.
Okay.
And she said dude before dude was cool.
Okay.
That's how hip she is. And she's like, you've got to go outside and play or get some friends. So anyway, she drugged me to this audition as a way of getting me to interact with the rest of the world that I loathed at the time. And I auditioned and was cast. And so my first role was the Artful Dodger in Oliver Twist.
Oh, what fun.
And man, did
Abe
that,
liked that.
That
was
it.
What was that reaction about
bit
it?
Bit my bug, man. Yeah.
Why did you react that way?
Because that was the coveted role. He got the role.
He did.
The Artful Dodger for a kid? Come on.
Well, the coveted role would have been Oliver Twist.
I don't think
so.
No,
I'm with Abe Dodger. No. Come on.
Dodger was fun. I'm not. Yeah.
I'll tell you. The Artful Dodger versus... Yeah,
way funner.
Much better.
Yeah.
Much better. So you play the Artful Dodger, so you do musicals then?
I did musicals. Yeah, nowadays it's probably not good for me to sing.
No?
So if I'm in a musical, I'm not singing in the musical.
Okay. So, are you dancing in the musical?
I can dance. I got to work at it. I've got two left feet, but I can do it, and I've done it, you know.
That must be strange to have two left feet. Buying shoes must be a difficult thing.
It is. Yeah.
And what brought you to Texas?
Well, I was working for the Department of Defense, actually, and that's what brought me out here.
We call it the DOD.
The DOD?
Yeah.
So I dotted on over, and I got a job. I was working at Fort Hood. I was actually there when that shooting occurred.
All right.
So, but I left that.
You were on base when that happened?
I was, yeah. I was on lockdown.
Wow. Yeah,
pretty interesting. So... I just love performing, and so it's just in your blood, right? I mean, once you do it, it was the best thing my mom ever could have done for me. I mean, it really helped make me who I am. So, I mean, I love the stage. I love doing stand-up comedy, doing improv, you know, whatever. It's just...
Okay. Stand-up comedy is crazy. So,
it is.
So, Carrie, did you all... Because you're a comedian. I don't gender the word. Do you do stand-up?
I've never done stand-up.
No, stand-up is crazy. Abe, what about you? Loss.
No.
I think it takes a certain amount of courage that most people just don't have.
The way I describe
it is, like, in most cases in theater and improv and everybody, the audience is on your side. They want you to succeed. Right. But when you do stand-up, the audience is exactly the opposite. Of that, I don't have that kind of courage.
I think the closest I got was like doing one man cabaret type shows,
right,
where I could do patter in between.
Yeah,
but it's not
the same
thing, because they're there to hear the music,
right? And you're really still protected by that fourth wall,
right?
Yeah, crazy. So you do stand up. Have you done any here in Austin, Texas?
I have not done any in Austin. Mainly, it's just a logistical thing for me since I don't live in Austin.
But you work here.
I do work here. It's just I mean, I would love to. As a matter of fact, you know. One of the fundraisers we're looking at having is a comedy show. So
there you go, stand up.
Yeah.
And are you at what kind of stand up comedian are you? Are you a storyteller? Are you a joke teller?
A little bit of both, because I think for me the funniest comedians are the ones that can tell a good story. I mean, because you could take a story. I mean, before Bill Cosby became the Bill Cosby we know now, I mean, he was the master storyteller. He could tell a story like nobody, right? And you would laugh your butt off, and you'd tell it to your friends and be like, dude, that's not funny. But it was his craft. His delivery made it. So, yeah, I mean, I think really the best comedians are storytellers.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. So, Carrie, do you live here in Austin?
No.
No, where do you live?
I came down from New York.
City?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of that place.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, how long have you been in New York?
Not very long. I kind of bounce back and forth between there and Los Angeles.
Okay, I've heard of that place too, actually.
Yeah.
Los Angeles, which you were doing the Groundlings.
I was.
Were you
a
member of the Groundlings company?
I was a member of the Groundlings Sunday company. Uh-huh. It's a very interesting system there.
Well, they all Second City has the same. I was a member of the comedy sports minor leagues when I was in Chicago. So I guess it's kind of the same thing. The Groundlings are awesome. I've worked with them several
times.
Yeah,
it's pretty incredible. I mean, the training that you get there is unbelievable. There are a handful of comedy schools in L.A., and I actually think that is L.A.'s sort of least appreciated resource.
Right.
Is that you can walk into any little comedy theater, any little comedy club on any night of the week and see some of the most brilliant, funny people in the world performing, and it's really remarkable.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up mostly in New York.
Ah, in the city?
Long Island.
Long Island. What
Long
town?
Long Island. Oi.
What town?
What's the most Jewish town you can think of?
God, you know what? I never. The whole island, really.
No, because you've got your Italian.
Great
section.
Neck. No,
there it is.
Okay,
that's
great
where
neck.
I'm from.
Okay, there you go. Got it.
Good job.
Long Island. You do not have the Long Island. You know, you wouldn't tell that from talking to you.
Yes,
so
that is.
I
true.
Guess that's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, Long Island. I spent a lot of time out on Shelter Island. I had a friend that lived out there.
Okay.
Which is an island right when where the islands fork off, and it's right there. Fork off.
Hey-o.
Right there in the middle. The rules are relaxed here. Anyway, so I used to go out there at Long Island, being slayed by the Long Island Expressway. So did you New York, L.A., did you go to school for theater?
I did not. I actually went to UT.
Oh, okay.
And I was an Italian studies major.
See. So did you know Elizabeth Vincentelli?
No,
because she's
I
French.
Didn't. I just she's an imposter.
Heard that somewhere.
You came to UT as an Italian language.
It's really weird, but the Italian department at UT is amazing. It's run by these like fierce Italian women, and it makes a school of 50,000 people into. I think my graduating class was like 15 of us.
Wow.
So it
was
awesome.
Should. Do you still have friends there?
Yeah.
Can you get them to open up a decent Italian restaurant?
It's hard.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, so were you involved at UT in the theater department at all?
I did do the plays, and I kind of cherry picked, like, oh, this person's interesting, I'll take a class from them,
okay.
And that sort of thing. And I did all the plays, but I grew up performing and knew that that's what I was going to do for the rest of my life. So I didn't really feel the need to major in it.
Really, really smart, actually. And I used to tell people my advice to people going to college was, if you're going to go to college for theater, at the time it was Juilliard or Yale, because you had Yale rep and the acting company as a jumping off point to get your equity card and get all that stuff done and get to work. Have you always done musicals?
No, actually. It was something I've kind of denied myself. And then I got really, I just really missed it. So I started a group in Los Angeles called Stupid Songs,
uh-huh.
Which was all my comedian friends who also compose music and can sing really well. And so we started doing these shows that we would create that are really fabulous, mostly because I just really missed doing musical theater and nobody believed that I could do it because I hadn't been doing it.
Right.
Had nothing on my resume. So that was sort of the beginning of me getting back into that a couple years ago. And then finally I just said, all right, I'm going to New York.
Because I'll tell you, for a comedian, the women's roles in musicals are so much fun. I mean, I would much rather
amazing.
Do the 80 Annies of the world than the ingenues of the world.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah,
and the list of roles is like so long.
Yeah, and getting longer, fortunately. So how did you find yourself? Where did you adopt this love of theater?
My parents were really fabulous about taking me and my sister to see shows in New York all the time. And as I mentioned in our little interview across the way,
our little interview.
My dad is a classic movie buff. So I was raised on Marx Brothers, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, Gene Kelly, like all of that stuff.
Do you remember the first show, the first Broadway show they took you to?
I don't.
Do you remember the first show that you saw that meant something, that somehow moved you to a point that you go, I might want to do this?
I honestly think it was watching Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers and then starting dancing school,
uh-huh.
Where I was just like, yep, that's it. This is who I am. That's all.
So did you ever live in your youth or before you went to college? Did you spend any time in Manhattan?
I did. I grew up mostly doing ballet, and so mm-hmm. I toured around a little bit when I was younger.
Who'd you dance with?
Dancing. The Oglevsky Ballet.
I don't know the Oglevsky Ballet, but it sounds fascinating.
It sounds like it was cut from a movie from the 40s.
You know, like,
it does. Probably was. Yeah, and I did that, and then I, in high school, every Saturday I was in acting school. Classes at the Lee Strasberg Theater Institute.
Of course. Well, you know, we interviewed Lee Strasberg Jr. here on the show, and he was here for something for the Lee Strasberg Institute. I gave him direction. I told him to do our thing with more feeling, and he laughed. Well, that's great. So now you're back in New York.
Yeah.
And but you split your time between L.A. and New York.
Yeah.
So are we assuming that you like to do theater and film equally?
I just like to act. I'm a big nerd about it. I'm really obsessed with doing musicals right now.
Oh, cool.
So that's really where I'm at.
Excellent. Are you a triple threat?
Ish.
How would you do, What do you describe yourself as? Like, I was an actor who sings and moves well, which means I was an actor who could barely carry a tune and couldn't dance at all.
Okay, so I'm an actress, and I can sing. I'm not a pop singer, but I can. Well, but we're regular,
yeah, right?
You know, Broadway style singing. Third, I'm probably an impressionist. Fourth, I'm a dancer.
There you go. Okay. Awesome. And did you take also not ballet? Did you also do jazz? And
yeah,
tap
all
and the
of
whole?
That. Yeah.
And you're here in a show that's got lots of tap dancing and stuff like that.
And
you don't
do
get
none
to dance.
Of it.
So good. So I'm a little disappointed. Not that I'm sure you're doing the role really well, but I could have been Lena Lamont in this. You don't have to sing and dance. I'd be right there.
Well, she does have a song.
She does?
It was not in the movie, but it's a Compton and Green song.
All right.
So
I don't remember.
She's in there. Act
I
two.
Saw the show in the 90s or 80s or whenever it opened. I don't remember. So, Abe, what's your story? You know, you've been backstage before, haven't you? When you were on the show, were you backstage?
Nope.
No? Oh, good.
I was just in the big room.
A lot of times I'll get people here that have been here with Nicole and not me, and I'll say something, and they go, Lisa, I've already talked about this backstage. So tell us your story. You're from, you told us Maryland.
Yeah, I grew
earlier.
Up halfway between Baltimore and Washington.
Okay.
And
are you, were your parents in government or of some sort of?
My dad worked for the government as a soil scientist, and my mom
as a what scientist?
A soil scientist.
Oh, I thought you said a soul scientist.
That's what I thought he said too.
My dad, it was a soul scientist.
I'm a soul man.
So, yeah. Do you have to move some knobs for that?
I did. I'm trying to figure out how to like hit the difference where it doesn't like hit the charts. But it's good. These are good problems to have.
Okay.
As you know, it's easier to pull someone back than bring them out as a director.
Yes, that is the truth.
Yes.
We're always saying more. Let us pull you back.
Yeah.
My mom was a watercolor artist, and she kind of stopped doing her art because she had 6 kids in 8 years.
Oh, wait, and raise me.
And I'm
my
the
Lord.
Exactly, and I'm the baby of those 6. So by the
raise
time
your
I
hand
came
if you're the baby.
Tall.
Yeah.
I'm the baby.
Me and you. Oh, good. Yeah. Sorry, Jerry.
Sorry.
Yeah. So I think having I showed a very early interest in the Jim Henson's, the Muppets, all that kind of stuff. So I would do puppet shows as a kid, and then when I realized there's a way to do this on a larger scale. I think I saw Hello Dolly at my sister's high school as a kid, and then Godspell, which was just like, what's happening? You know, this is like blowing my mind. And then borrowing the cast albums from my Jewish neighbors, and exactly.
We hold the keys to all the cast albums.
You do. I'm telling you.
So funny.
I'm telling you. So and then you know she definitely nurtured it, and I started performing at a young age too. But
did you go to college for theater?
I did. I went to. I was lucky in that I went to a high school for the arts in Baltimore City, which was a really great leg up.
By the way, if you
it.
Ever have any questions about Baltimore, I've seen every episode of The Wire, so I know everything.
Okay, but do you know how to do the accent, hon? Because that's how they talk.
All I can
there.
Say is Balmer.
Hey, hon, you need to watch some more John Waters films,
or not?
Yeah, exactly. They're kind of disturbing, but great. Yeah, so I did go to college at CCM, and then I ended up quitting school because I just. Wasn't having it there. I just was not enjoying it. And I booked a non-equity bus and truck tour
of
Can-Can, everyone's favorite musical. And then I did, for the same company, I played the Tommy Tune role in my one and only like a year and a half later. So it was after that I moved to New York. So I started as a actor first before becoming a director.
That's
and
that's
was in New York for
typical.
About yeah in New York for about 18 years.
Yeah. So how did you do in New York? How'd you get your equity card? Did you get your equity card?
I did. I was very lucky. It was like the reason I left school is because the person running the college left on a hiatus, but he ended up never coming back. So they brought in directors from New York City. So a guy named Richard Casper, who's no longer with us, and Bob Nigro came from New York to direct the shows.
Right.
So my first audition in New York was for a show that he was directing. So I got my equity card.
Right away.
At an evening dinner theater. I was making like $22 a week or something.
I remember evening dinner theater.
Yeah, it became the Westchester Broadway. Yeah.
So amazing. So you might have been in New York at the same time. So when I got my equity card,
yes.
There was at that time, the only way to get your card was to be offered a contract.
Correct.
And the only way to audition for an equity show was to be an equity. And it was this big catch-22. You always had to find your way into it. A lot of people did it through children's theater.
Yes. Yes.
And
some great stories have come out of those children's theater tours.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But I was lucky in that after I got my card, I worked pretty consistently.
As a performer?
Yeah, I did. I worked for Tommy Tune for 4 years. I did Grand Hotel and the Will Rogers Follies.
I saw Grand Hotel when it opened.
Yeah, a great show.
Yeah.
And Will
Rogers.
My friend
Michael DeVries was in it. Did you know Michael?
I know Michael DeVries.
Yeah. I just got an email from him today.
All the tall guys know each other.
It's true. Michael DeVries, I should say, just retired. He did, 10 years, 15 years in Wicked. And I believe he just retired.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he was a lovely guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, and I went through that thing where I was like, I was always in the ensemble. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to turn down opportunities to be in big production shows. And so I slowly started working in other places and doing roles. And then the directing thing just sort of, it was something I always wanted to do.
Were you a protege of Tommy Tune?
I wouldn't say I was a protege, no. But I mean, I worked for him for, you know, in those two shows over 4 years.
As a performer.
And I was able to, you know, to bend his ear about all kinds of things.
Awesome. But, so now what brought you to Austin? Did Zach Theater bring you to Austin?
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
I was working at the Texas Shakespeare Festival, directing their and choreographing their musical every summer. And someone referred from Dallas Theater Center, my good friend Joel Farrell, who has my job at Dallas Theater Center. Dave Stakely called him and said, "Hey, I need you. I need someone who can do what you do." And luckily my friend, referred me and I was close by doing that job at the Shakespeare Festival. Mm-hmm. So Dave was able to come and
where's Texas Shakespeare Festival located?
It is
show my ignorance.
It is East Texas. It's in Kilgore, Texas.
I know Kilgore.
Yeah.
The Rangerettes are there.
Yes, they are. The museum and everything. Yeah. So it is this, it's this incredible little thing that happens every summer there.
Right.
You know, this small, small town, all of a sudden they have these, you know, great artists coming
in for summer. That is kind of my dream. I would love to, you have these cities like, and I can't, like Williamstown Theater Festival, all these cities that are these sleepy little towns. And then for a week, a month, or a season, they come alive with theater, and the theater is what brings them to life, and that just excites me.
There's something very romantic about that,
too. Yeah.
I worked at Goodspeed Opera House, and that was had that feeling a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At Goodspeed?
Well, I was working at the Chester Theater, so it was like it was like where they would do workshops of musicals, so it wasn't the, you know, it was a little off the beaten path.
Okay, cool. And how do you like Texas? Coming from, well, you were in Texas before. Were you living in Texas when you were doing the Texas Shakespeare Festival?
No, it was a summer. It was a summer gig.
But
so
you're still
I'd come
in New
for
York.
6 weeks. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm enjoying Austin. I think this is the place to live. You know.
Okay.
In Texas.
Well, good. Well, we're happy to have you. So, Jerry, did you ever live in New York?
I never lived in New York. I'd love to visit, but yeah, at this point, I could never live there.
Okay. So then, this is a question for Abe and Carrie: West Side or East Side?
West Side.
Thank you.
Oh, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't? Do you live there now?
Wait, you mean
where do you live? The West.
Oh, I'm in Midtown.
West or East?
Where am I?
What side of Fifth Avenue?
Like, I'm Seventh.
So you're good. That's West.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
I'm a
West
Side.
Snob.
Were you gonna have to throw her out as she said?
I literally thought you meant Austin, Texas. So I was thinking, Maynard's really cute. Where my brain went.
I'm in New York. When people ask me where I'm from, I'm born and bred in Houston, but I moved to New York right after high school. So I really claim New York. I don't claim Texas, which is an anathema to many people here in this state. But so New York is like my home. So, and I'm a West Sider, although I lived in Washington Heights for years, and which may as well have been Brooklyn. Awesome. I wish we had a we're out of time. We spent more time than we're actually allowed back here, and they're going to come and kick us out. But I'd love to have you guys back here backstage. And Carrie, do you go right back to New York after this?
I don't know yet.
You don't know? It's the life of an actor. And Abe, very quickly, what's next for you at Zach?
I'm directing and choreographing Goodnight Moon for the Family Theater Series in the new year. So looking forward to that.
Okay. And Jerry, what about you? What's next?
Just upward and onward with our season at VLA. So
great. Well, thank you so much for coming back here.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.